out of George's sight, beyond the edge of the slab on which he and Nodon hid. For moments that seemed like hours, the two men lay there unmoving.
"What are we going to do?" George wondered. "How can we get on without the main engine?"
In the darkness, George felt Nodon's helmet touch his again.
"Do you think he's gone?" the young man asked.
Before George could answer, he caught another glint in the corner of his eye. Pushing slightly away from the slab, he saw that their attacker was punching holes in their propellant tanks. Thin, cold jets of cryogenic hydrogen and helium-3 hissed noiselessly into the vacuum, brief, whitish wisps of gas that dissipated into the emptiness of space in an eye blink.
"We're moving,"
George muttered, even though Nodon could not hear him. Like a child's balloon when he lets the air out of it, the gases escaping from the punctured tanks were pushing Matilda slowly away from the asteroid.
"We're gonna get a fucking tour of the solar system," George said aloud. "Shame we'll be too dead to enjoy the sights."
"I'm surprised he hasn't sworn us out of this hotel already," Fuchs said morosely. Pancho Lane tried to make an encouraging smile. Lars and Mandy both looked so down, so bewildered was the word for it, Pancho decided. Overrun by events and their own emotions. "Hey, don't worry about the hotel," she said, trying to sound cheerful. "Astro'll pay for it if Humphreys reneges." Fuchs was still in the light gray business suit he'd worn for his meeting with Humphreys. Amanda was wearing a pale turquoise knee-length frock, modest enough, but she still made Pancho feel gawky and shapeless, as usual. Mandy didn't mean to, but whenever Pancho was near her, she felt like a beanpole standing beside a vidstar. "We're going back to Ceres," Amanda said. "Back to prospecting." The two of them were sitting glumly on the sofa set beneath the hologram of Valles Marineris on Mars, the grandest Grand Canyon in the solar system. "What about Helvetia Limited?" Pancho asked. "You're not going to let Humphreys muscle you out of business, are you?" Fuchs grunted.
"What business? Our inventory went up in flames."
"Yeah, but the insurance ought to cover enough of it to get you started again." Fuchs shook his head wearily. "You got a lot of goodwill out there on Ceres," Pancho urged. "Shouldn't ought to let that go to waste." Amanda's brows rose hopefully. "Don't want to let Humphreys get a monopoly, do you, Lara's old buddy?"
"I'd prefer to strangle him," Fuchs growled.
Pancho leaned back in her chair, stretched her long, lean legs. "Tell you what, Astro will advance you the credit to restock your warehouse up to the limit that the insurance will pay you." Fuchs looked at her.
"You can do this?"
"I'm learning how to play the board of directors. I got a clutch of them on my side. They don't want Humphreys to monopolize the belt any more than you do."
Amanda asked, "Is your group strong enough to let you do what you just offered to do?"
Nodding, Pancho replied, "Take my word for it." Turning to her husband, Amanda said hopefully,
"Lars, we could start Helvetia all over again."
"With a smaller inventory," he grumbled. "The insurance won't cover everything we lost."
"But it's a start," Amanda said, smiling genuinely.
Fuchs did not smile back. He looked away from his wife. Pancho thought there was something going on inside his head that he didn't want Mandy to see.
"I'm going back to prospecting," he said, his eyes focused on the far wall of the sitting room.
"But I'll take Star Power back as soon as the current lease on her is finished."
"But what about Helvetia?" Amanda asked. He turned toward her once more.
"You will have to run Helvetia. You can stay on Ceres while I take the ship out."
Pancho studied them. There was something going on between them, some hidden agenda someplace that she couldn't fathom.
"Lars," said Amanda in a very soft voice, "are you certain that this is what you want to do?"
"It's what I must do, darling."
His voice sounded implacable. Pancho invited them both to dinner at the Earthview restaurant off the hotel's lobby. "Strictly a social evening," she told them. "No talk about Humphreys or Ceres or any kind of business at all, okay?" They agreed, half-heartedly. So naturally, They talked about business through the entire meal. Poncho's business. The standing joke about the Earth View was that it was the finest restaurant within 400,000 kilometers, which was perfectly true. The other two eateries in Cellini, up in the Grand Plaza, were mere bistros. Two levels beneath the lunar surface, the Earth View featured sweeping window walls that displayed holographic views from the moon's surface. It was almost like looking through real windows at the gaunt, cracked floor of the giant crater Alphonsus and its worn, slumped ring-wall mountains. But the Earth was always in that dark sky, hanging like a splendid glowing jewel of sparkling blue and glowing white, ever-changing, yet always present. The Earth View prided itself on having a human staff, no robots in sight. Poncho always felt that a truly top-rate restaurant should use tablecloths, but the Earth View used glittering placemats made of lunar honeycomb metal, thin and supple as silk. None of them had changed clothes for dinner. Fuchs was still wearing his gray suit, Amanda her turquoise knee-length dress. Poncho, who favored coveralls and soft boots, had started the day in a business outfit of chocolate brown slacks, pale yellow sweater, and light tan suede vest. Amanda had loaned her a light auburn Irish lace stole to dress up your outfit. Once their handsome young waiter had brought their drinks and taken their dinner order, an awkward silence fell over their table. They had agreed not to talk business. What other topic of conversation was there? Poncho sipped at her margarita and watched the waiter's retreating back. Nice buns, she thought. Wonder if he's married.
So, what have you been doing lately, Poncho? Amanda finally said, more to break the silence than any other reason.
Me? I'm following up on something Dan Randolph talked about years ago. Scooping fusion fuels from Jupiter.
Fuchs's ears perked up.
Fusion fuels? Yeah, you know, helium-3, tritium, other isotopes. Jupiter's atmosphere is full of 'em.
That's a steep gravity well, said Amanda.
Tell me about it, Poncho said. You know, I've been approached by some nuts who want to go skimming Jupiter's atmosphere as a stunt. They even brought a network producer with 'em.
Insanity, Fuchs muttered.
Yeah, sure. But then there's a gaggle of scientists who want to set up a research station in orbit around Jupiter, study the moons and all.
But the radiation, Amanda said.
Tight orbit, underneath the Jovian Van Allen belts. Might be doable.
Astra would fund this?
Hell no, Poncho blurted. University's got to come up with the funding. We'll build the sucker.
And use it as a platform for mining Jupiter's atmosphere, Amanda added.
Poncho smiled at her. Sometimes I forget how smart she is, Poncho thought. I let her sweet face and nice boobs fool me.
Then she looked at Fuchs. He sat with his drink untouched before him, his eyes staring off into some private universe.
Whatever he's thinking about, Poncho realized, he's a zillion kilometers from here.
Once they got back inside the ship, it took George and Nodon hours to patch the holes punched through the hull by the attacker's laser and check out all the systems. They were both dead tired by the time they were able to take off their spacesuits and clump, wearily, fearfully, to the bridge. George took the command chair. Nodon slipped into the chair at his right. "You run a diagnostic on the power generator," said George. "I'll check the nav computer and see where the fuck we're heading." They worked in silence for another 20 minutes. At last Nodon said, "I can repair the generator. He knocked out one set of electrodes. We have spares." George nodded. "Okay, then. If you can get the generator back online, we won't have to worry about electrical power for the life support systems." Nodding, Nodon said, "That is good news."
"Right. Now here's the bad news. We're up Schitt's Creek without a paddle."
Nodon said nothing. He held his bony face impassive. But George saw that even his shaved pate was sheened with perspiration. "Sure isn't the temperature in here," George told himself. In fact, the bridge felt decidedly chilly. With a heavy sigh, George said,
"He knocked enough holes in the propellant tanks to send us jetting deeper into the belt.
And the main engine is beyond repair. Probably, then we will die. Looks that way, mate. Unless we can get some help. The comm system is down.